It's 20 years ago this week since Diana, Princess of Wales, was killed in a car crash in Paris. The anniversary has seen a wave of commemorations and remembrance in the UK, where two decades on from her death, she's still a figure that looms large in the nation's psyche.
DW.
Goodbye, England's rose. May you ever grow in our hearts. You were the grace that placed itself where lives were torn apart.
The funeral of Diana, Princess of Wales, came after a week of shock in Britain. The country didn't know how to react to her death. The royal family didn't know how to respond to the loss. And for those who were friends of Diana, it just didn't seem real. That's where her story ends. But where did it begin? The child of Viscount, later Earl Spencer, she was born in 1961 and educated in England and Switzerland. Her life was, although part of the aristocracy, relatively normal until her meeting with Prince Charles, the heir to the British throne. It was so normal that as a teenager she was working as a nanny and a babysitter. And that's how American Mary Robertson came to know Diana Spencer, as she was at the time, when she turned up at her door in London for a job interview.
We had no idea who she was. The agency certainly didn't tell us. When I opened my front door and saw this vision, I just couldn't believe it. She came in, we chatted a bit, she played with my son for probably close to an hour. My son adored her. And over the course of that year, she and I became actually very good friends. And she acted like a perfectly ordinary person. She would run errands for me. She would wash the breakfast dishes. She would fold laundry.
And that was how things remained for a few months until Diana took a trip to Scotland. Unbeknown to Mary, it was to the Queen's residence at Balmoral, where she'd spent time with Prince Charles. Though on her return to London, she wasn't very positive about her future with the future king.
And I said, "Do you think anything will develop?" And she said, "Well, he didn't invite me, his mother did." And I just had to laugh at my babysitter referring to Her Majesty, the Queen of England, as his mother. She said, "He's 31 and I'm only 19. I don't think he would be taking a second look at me." And I very optimistically said, "I wouldn't be too sure."
As we now know, Charles and Diana did become an item, and that meant some changes to her home life. At the time, she was sharing an apartment with two other young women in central London. Charles Stonehill was part of the circle of friends and knew Diana well.
She stayed in the flat until the engagement was announced. And I think when the engagement was announced, she'd actually left the flat and moved into accommodation that was provided, I recall, at Clarence House. When she became associated with Prince Charles, I think the flat was a wonderful place of refuge and privacy for her. What I remember most about the royal wedding was driving down the Mall in my rather beaten-up old MGB with its roof down. I was surrounded by a lot of grand cars and limousines, and my blue MG stood out a mile, but I was very proud of it. But the wedding itself was, everyone knows what that was like. It was a very formal, fairy tale type of event. From my point of view, two things live on through Diana's life. The first and most important are her two sons, who are clearly a remarkable tribute to her and the way that she brought them up. And secondly, I think the causes that she adopted and the courage she showed in pursuing the causes of landmines and other atrocities was a real example to the rest of the world and to the royal family itself.
The more expeditiously we can end this plague on Earth caused by the landmine, the more readily can we set about the constructive tasks to which so many give their hand in the cause of humanity.
I'd never really read much tabloid information. I hadn't been to the UK, and I didn't read People magazine. So I thought, I don't know, she seems fine. You know, I guess she wants to be involved in this issue. Let's see if she has the chops to get involved in really a down-and-dirty campaign to ban landmines. Like, this isn't just a cause célèbre. This is something very important about saving lives and people.
Jerry White is one of the co-founders of Landmine Survivors Network. He lost a leg to one of the buried explosives whilst visiting Israel and became good friends with Diana when she took up the issue. though he admits he was unsure as to how useful her involvement would be. That is, until he heard her speak on the subject for the very first time.
How can countries which manufacture and trade in these weapons square their conscience with such human devastation?
The speech was, you know, totally narrative changing, where she put the face and people at the center of the campaign to ban landmines. She got it because it was a question of compassion. Is she comfortable herself in the face of disability and disaster, disease and suffering? And the way she talked in the speech, I was like, this is true. This woman gets and has the gift of compassion.
Diana was a very young girl, and she had all the interests that, you know, any other young girl of her age did at the time. You know, the music, she loved Duran Duran, she loved everything that everyone else, you know, was loving, the fashion, everything. She was a real inspiration.
Actor and presenter Cleo Rockus was a regular on TV programmes hosted by madcap UK broadcaster Kenny Everett, of whom Diana was a huge fan. And the three became close friends.
We always see pictures of her with her head looking half down and big soulful eyes and not looking happy. She was so much fun, and she had a really fantastic sense of humour and a real quick wit. She was absolutely the opposite of most of the pictures we see of her, unless we see pictures of her laughing. She loved to laugh, and so I think that's really important that people don't think of her as being somebody who's sad. There's a huge amount of happiness in that girl.
The trio spent time hanging out at Kenny's home and once even sneaked her out disguised in an army jacket, leather cap and sunglasses to one of London's most popular gay bars. Nobody noticed the woman, who at the time was still destined to be the future queen of the United Kingdom of Great Britain and Northern Ireland, as she was flanked by the flamboyant Everett and his neighbour and equally flamboyant friend, a certain Freddie Mercury from Queen.
It's a kind of magic. A kind of magic.
Diana felt an affinity in a way with the gay community at the time. It was still a little bit hard for people to come out or for people to be openly gay. And I think she just saw that as part of the plight, as well as the fact that HIV/AIDS had become a nightmare. We were all losing wonderful friends left, right and centre. And somebody had to stand up, and she was in a position to make such a difference, and she knew that. And she would go to the hospitals in the middle of the night. She took William and I think Harry too when they were young to show them that life isn't all easy and great. People, we are all on this planet together, and she had a great impact.
And that compassion is something that Diana's sons, Princes William and Harry, have continued. Both are dedicating their time in public service to improving the lives of others. And for those that knew Diana the best, that's the real legacy that is left behind 20 years on from her passing.
She was always just so proud of her children, the boys, and absolutely loved them. Just to even mention them, her face would just sort of light up.
Diana was just, you know, just cut out to be a mother. That's really all she wanted. She told me one day she wanted to have a dozen children of her own, and she hoped they'd all be as delightful as my child was.
This is Ashley Byrne for DW in London, England.
This report was brought to you by DW.